The 10K Collective, our sister podcast, is the world's newest e-commerce podcast, now live on Apple Podcasts and on Stitcher. It's for 6, 7, and 8-figure Amazon and e-commerce sellers. It's highly actionable, but it's focused on how to scale your business for sale or long-term profit, not short-term hacks. We have deep talks with real e-commerce sellers and experts in industries like sourcing, team building, and managing cash. Search your podcast app for 10K Collective or go to 10kcollective.com for show notes or to listen online. That's 10K for kilo, collective.com, 10kcollective.com.
I hereby introduce to you Mr. Michael Veazey.
Hey, 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 welcome to Amazing FBA, the place to be for UK-based Amazon entrepreneurs. I'm your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome to the show. Hey there, folks. Welcome back to Amazing FBA. This is your host, Michael Veazey. Welcome back to the show. Today is part of a series based around the 7 Habits of Highly Effective People by Stephen Covey. It's not a very catchy title, and it's not a catchy book either. I think it's very deep principles. This is part of one of our mindset series. We've got a series of mindset things now, because I think that it is very important basis for business. The further I go, the more I realize the difference between success and failure is mostly in your head. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't intellectual business model components. There are. This is a more general set of principles around interpersonal behaviors, and they may, some of them sound obvious, and some of them are if you've got it right, but they are still one. It's one thing to think, oh, this is obvious, and it's another thing to check, are you actually doing this in your behaviors on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month basis? So Paradigms of Interdependence is the name of this part three of the Covey book. So some quotes from Covey, and then I'm going to move into how this relates to e-commerce, business building, and building relationships in e-commerce in my experience. So Covey says, before we move into the area of public victory, in other words, this part of stuff, we should remember that effective interdependence can only be built on a foundation of independence. Private victory precedes public victory. Self-mastery and self-discipline are the foundations of good relationships with others. And that is something that we've covered in detail, covering the wisdom from the rest of Covey's book up to this point. So the fact that we start off as dependent beings when we're at home, we're financially dependent on our parents to start with, we are physically dependent as very small children. And then the first victory is to become independent. So in other words, we need self-mastery. We need to be, habit one, proactive. Habit two is to begin with the end in mind. So start with clear goals or even a vision of where you want your whole life to go and where you want your business to be in a few years' time. And then habit three, the last episode we looked at that was the put first things first. That's time management, effectively, or task management, but actually it's self-management in some way. So all of those three habits are really about mastering yourself and your own life. From this point, we're looking at how you interact with other people. But it's very important to say, I think that's absolutely true, that my experience of failing relationships with other people, including entire failing businesses, you could say in relationship terms, a business that goes down because the customers don't like the product, is effectively a failure of a relationship with the customer. So the relationship between the business that they buy from and the customer. Now, in the customer's mind, that's often Amazon that they're buying from. They don't really think about the distinction between Amazon as a company that retails their own products versus third-party sellers, right? We know about that difference because we are in that business. But for a customer, there's a breakdown of trust in a product and in a delivery system and in a sales system, if you like. So I would argue that a lot of things in business are effectively, ultimately, relationship issues. Not everything, but many, many things, certainly in the marketing area. And I think that's one of the reasons why I'm putting this out, and I think is needed as part of the debate, is that marketing has become very numbers driven, and that's very important, but it's not the whole picture. And it's very, very important to remember that behind each number is a person. And there's ultimately a human relationship that drives success or failure, albeit that the mass movements of people can be measured in numbers. They're still people. There's one thing that Covey says about this, which I think is really true. There is no way to parachute into this terrain. The landscape, says Covey, the landscape ahead is covered with the fragments of broken relationships of people who have tried. They've tried to jump into effective relationships without the maturity, the strength of character to maintain them. And I think that's true. And by the way, insofar as you push forward my idea that relationships breakdown is what's behind somebody thinking a product is only worth 2 stars, is because basically you promised them one thing and they feel like they've received another. And by the way, that's human perception. That's not really a question of objective truth, because otherwise all Amazon reviews for the same product would be the same. And they're clearly not. Every product that's been that for a while has some 1-star reviews and some 5-star, mostly on the 5-star end. But in other words, the same product has been perceived differently by different people. So we are dealing with human perception. Therefore, we are dealing with human relationships. I think it's so important to underline that, because once you put the screen in the way and you put numbers in the way and the Amazon systems and the technical complexity, we forget that quite quickly. So although it may sound like a statement of the obvious, I think it's so important to remind yourself again and again that we are dealing with human beings. Yes, you're working through a screen on one end and they're working through a screen on the other when they buy, but there is a human relationship there. The most important ingredient, says Covey, we put into any relationship is not what we say or even what we do, but what we are. And I think that's true. So people will judge you if you, they will certainly judge you by what you say relative to what you do. So in other words, if you say my product will last for 10 years guaranteed and it breaks when they take it out of the packet, there's a bit of a mismatch. There's a major mismatch between what you've said and what your product does. And as a business as a whole, then your customer is going to perceive you as basically not being truthful and therefore a lying type of business and a lack of integrity. And so what you personally do very quickly becomes expanded to what your business is perceived as, if people indeed perceive your business as separate from Amazon, right? It gets quite complicated quite quickly, but having integrity and having principles as a business does come across in an important way. So the other thing that Covey says, which I think is really important, it says, if our words and actions come from superficial human relationships, techniques, the personality ethics, rather than from our inner core, the character ethic, then others will sense that duplicity. Now, that might be a little bit complicated for actually selling products to individual consumers if you're selling mass market products that cost a few tens of dollars to thousands of people. It might be a little bit difficult to let them get to know you that closely, but certainly the more you can break through the faceless character of most Amazon-based businesses and have a sense and put across to your customers a sense that you really care about excellence and you care about serving your customers, whether that's through a website or your own email marketing or your own Instagram, increasingly Instagram presence, your Pinterest presence, and YouTube, other such social media presences. Could be Facebook groups. Becoming, in other words, more of a humanized corporation with people behind it, including you as the founder of it or one of the partners in it, that actually seems to genuinely care about quality and about customer service rather than just saying the right things but acting in a manipulative way, then that's actually going to be a very important thing to stand out from the crowd of, frankly, manipulative or just, you know, untruthful advertising. And there's a lot of that out there. So I really think that it's actually, like a lot of this stuff, this isn't a moral imperative I'm trying to impose on anyone. In the end, I think this is good business practice. That means you have a sustainable business that people like and will become loyal to over time. And I think that comes down to solid character foundations of integrity rather than just some clever manipulation technique, which might work short term, but long term will start to burn trust. Covey says, we often live for years with the chronic pain of our lack of vision, leadership, or management in our personal lives. We feel vaguely uneasy and uncomfortable and occasionally take steps to ease the pain, at least for some time. Because the pain is chronic, though, we get used to it, we learn to live with it. But when we have problems in our interactions with other people, we're very aware of acute pain. It's often intense and we want it to go away. That's when we try to treat the symptoms with quick fixes and techniques with the band-aids of the personality ethic. We don't understand that the acute pain, this is Covey still, the acute pain is an outgrowth of the deeper chronic problem. And until we stop treating the symptoms and start treating the problem, our efforts will only bring counterproductive results. We will only be successful at obscuring the chronic pain even more. So to summarize all of that, I think what Covey is saying is pretty simple. If you have bad habits of personal leadership, so you are not proactive, you're reactive, Amazon changes something and you just panic and go and bitch about it on Facebook instead of finding a way around it. If you don't have the habit of personal leadership and a vision, in other words, you're just chucking stuff out onto Amazon because it seems like everyone else is doing it instead of wanting to build a real business for a specific type of person to really solve a physical problem, produce beautiful products and create a sustainable business. If you don't put first things first, in other words, you just sit there and react rather than deciding we're going to improve our quality control this year because our products need to be better, or we're going to develop a new product line or whatever it is, and actually then act on that, and instead of which you let the world react to you. Those are, I believe, the chronic problems that Covey's referring to. So you will get, as soon as you put a rubbish product out into the marketplace, if you didn't have a vision for a product and you didn't have the discipline to implement quality control as a priority, for example, because you are rushing reactively to get the product out into the marketplace, reacting to your competition, for example, then you will get the acute pain of the personal relationship when it's not exactly that personal. But if an Amazon customer leaves a rude review for your product, effectively what they're saying to you as the seller of that product is, you promised me one thing, or I had an expectation and you've broken that promise, or my expectation has been disappointed. Now, there's an awful lot of complexity that goes around that, because there's always a certain percentage of angry people out there who will leave a rude review on everything. And there's a certain percentage of people that are so positive that they'll leave five-star reviews, positive reviews on everything as well. But I guess you can probably tell by the average or the spread, and that's why the review system works. If there's a lot of angry people out there, they probably are a lot of broken promises, implicit or explicit promises. But nevertheless, they believed the product would work in one way and it's actually happened in another way. Same is true for broken relationships with business partners, where your interests aren't aligned and you didn't actually have any clarity about your own future direction and what you wanted from the business. Therefore, you didn't articulate it. You didn't have the proactivity to have that conversation. We'll talk about that more in a second. But broadly speaking, the lack of personal leadership and lack of initiative ends up resulting in the acute pain of the relationship problems. But if the problem is your lack of initiative, not proactive, a lack of vision and a lack of discipline in implementation daily, you cannot solve that with some clever negotiating tactic or some personality way of persuading your business partner by being very charming or very forceful or very anything else. What it comes down to is you've got to get control of yourself. I absolutely agree with that. And I think e-commerce is particularly harsh in this way, because if you have bad personal habits, what strikes me, and I say bad personal habits, I don't mean swearing or not taking showers in the morning. I simply mean the not having the habit of being proactive, waiting for answers instead of going out and getting them, not developing a vision, not implementing what your business needs to move forward. You will simply never develop a business. You will go around in circles at home and then quit. And I've seen that with so many people that come onto the Facebook group, and also clients that I've worked with. I try and be very selective who I take on these days, because I've seen in the past, even though I tried to be somewhat selective then, that quite a few people will simply quit, because there's a lot of isolation in this game. And if you don't have self-discipline and good habits, then there's no way that the relationship with a coach can save you. I can help people develop better habits and I can keep them accountable, which I think is critical, but I can't substitute for an entire, you know, personal development. And the same is true for me as well. I mean, I have a business coach, and sometimes I'm sure he despairs of my implementation speed based on, I don't know, whatever lack of discipline that I have in implementation. I try and work on it and I get better with practice, but nobody can substitute for that. So coming back to one of the first things that Covey talks about in his book, which is the concept of PPC balance. It's a definition of what he calls effectiveness. So being effective, i.e. getting results that you want, rather than efficiency, getting a lot done in a short time. The PPC balance is the idea of the story, the goose that laid the golden eggs. In other words, the productivity or the results is the golden eggs, and the production capability, PC, is in this case the goose. So in other words, production capability might be in a relationship with the supplier and their products are physical products you sell. Production capability might be in the relationship you have with your customers, the brand loyalty you have, and the product might be for them receiving the product, and for you, profit or revenue. So this PPC balance, the balance between working on a thing that can give you results versus the results themselves, is one of the critical things that he talks about. As Covey says, in an interdependent situation, the golden eggs are the effectiveness, the wonderful synergy, the results created by open communication and positive interaction with others. And to get those eggs or the results on a regular basis, we need to take care of the goose. We need to create and care for the relationships that make those results realities. Now, just to reflect on this for a moment, I mean, one of the absolutely classic relationships, I mean, for me, I think the areas in a typical Amazon business, relatively simple, small version, is number one, your customers, number two, your product suppliers, these are absolute minimum, Number three, your other suppliers. Very probably you'll have photographers and designers involved at the very least. You might have other people doing research for you. You might have a coach. You might have a community of people that you interact with. And quite possibly as well, you might have a business partner or a team of owners or sort of management team, depending on the size and complexity of your business. So I think in every single one of those cases, we need to take care of the relationship and work on the right principles to make sure that we get the results. Otherwise, if we just focus on results at the cost of relationships, the business isn't going to be around for very long. And especially true in a very fast moving place like e-commerce, especially on Amazon. Absolutely true that if you don't take care of the relationship with your customers, your business will be toast very fast. But it's also true that your relationships with your product suppliers are critical. And also if you have any business partners or management team or owners, that's absolutely critical as well. So let's come to the second part of this main discussion here, which is about a concept called the emotional bank account. Very, very simple, but I think very powerful. We all know what a financial bank account is, says Covey. We make deposits into it and build up a reserve from which we can make withdrawals when we need to. An emotional bank account is a metaphor that describes the amount of trust that's been built in a relationship. So basically what he's saying is the currency of relationships is not money, it's trust, which is an interesting one, right? Because we all get very obsessed with money, and understandably so. If you're running a business, one of the ways you measure results is the measurable thing, after all, that's easier to measure than everything else is your money. But the other things that can be harder to measure actually, I would argue, produce the money in the first place. And because they're not so measurable, we can start to overlook them very quickly and get over obsessed with the financial results and forget that the money coming in from customers is as a result of the amount of trust they have in us. Also, other emotions come in like desire. If your product looks desirable and beautiful, then that's obviously very important. But I do agree with Covey's emphasis on trust, because I do think that's probably the rarest thing in online business, that actually the problem people have most is not seeing that something is desirable, but trusting and believing that what you say is true. So if you have a beautiful looking product picture and it says this product will last for 10 years, then they may not believe that because they've bought enough widgets that are second rate or third rate from Amazon and had a bad experience. You've lost their trust. And to some extent, Amazon has that problem as well with their review system being manipulated and with the amount of cheap goods they've got there direct from Chinese factories, which, by the way, I'm not saying are good or bad quality. I mean, pretty much everything is made in China, and that's a gross exaggeration and simplification, but something like 80% of the world's goods, last time I read about it. Don't know if that's an absolute statistic, but the majority of the world's good. So there is everything from the incredibly bad quality to incredibly good, but there is quite a lot of mediocre quality on Amazon now, I would say. And that does affect people's trust. So I think we have an even bigger job on our hands in the 2019, I should say, and 2020 to win trust than ever. So I really do think, as an emphasis, building trust is absolutely critical. So there are six ways that Covey has identified to increase trust or make deposits in the emotional bank account, as he puts it. So here's an overview of the six ways. And I really think it's worth making a list of this and then just reflecting, just make another massive list of all the ways this could possibly impact in all the different types of relationships you have in your business. And I really think this is a very, very valuable exercise. I don't hear people doing this. I don't see it being advertised as a way of improving your business because it isn't a sexy tactic. It's a long-term, deep commitment to proper principles. But I equally, for that reason, it's a great competitive advantage if you really do it properly. Again, this is not a moralistic point. This is not an emotional health, psychological podcast. These are solid business points. It happens that behaving in a way that is morally acceptable to most people, like being honest and in a way that shows emotional understanding, is actually great business in a situation where most people behave with neither understanding nor integrity, for example. So don't misunderstand me here. This is about business success. And I really think that business success comes down to being trustworthy in an environment where most people have lost trust. So here are the six major deposits in overview that Covey suggests to increase your trust level with in any relationship. First of all, number one, understanding the individual. Number two, attending to the little things. Number three, keeping commitments. Number four, clarifying expectations. Number five, showing personal integrity. And number six, apologizing sincerely when you make a withdrawal. In other words, when you reduce somebody's trust in you or your product or your business. So let's look at each of those in turn. So the first major deposit is understanding the individual. And I really think this is absolutely one of those things that people immediately skip over when they start using numbers-based tools to decide what products to sell or how to differentiate their products. The first and foremost thing I would say is go and understand what people want. Go get it and give it to them. So the very simplified version we have with Amazing FBA with the product launch model is niche source launch. Niche is find out what people want. Number two, the source is go get it. And number three, market it and launch it is give it to them, right? Simplistic, but nevertheless, I think it's true, it's valid. Now, the bit most people skip over is finding out what people want, or even more important, which people are you talking about? So I really, really advocate more than ever before defining the PAP, the PAP, as I call it, the person and the pain. This is the entire basis for everything I do in my coaching and consulting and the private label process course, the PLP. Again, because in an environment where everyone is driven by numbers, the way to stand out is to be driven by people and understanding. That doesn't mean you ignore the numbers. It means you understand the numbers in the context of them showing people's behavior en masse, right? But they're still people. So I think the most important thing you can do to successfully develop a product, whether you're private labeling in the purest sense of just adding a logo, or whether you're actually going the full hog and developing a completely custom-made product or any points in between, is very simple. I think you need to talk to people. First of all, decide which people you're going to solve a problem for and what problem you're going to solve for them, the PAP. And then talk to real people. Ask them to use rival products, you know, order stuff from Amazon. When you talk to these people, then discover what their problems are and what solutions they've tried out, what their alternatives are. Understand their alternatives and how they feel about those alternatives. Do they really work well? If they work beautifully, there's a problem out there that's being beautifully solved by somebody else, I would just not go into that market because it's going to be very hard to differentiate. However, if they're somewhere where then there's a 2.5 star average stars or something with the rival Amazon products, there may be a problem there that isn't being properly solved, in which case, talk to the people who use it. For example, if you're talking to podcasters and you want to create a microphone, talk to podcasters. Don't just create one in the abstract without understanding what your market wants and needs. Also, understand that if you're going to go into it, how is your product going to be different from the one that I'm using, for example, this Rode podcaster mic? I mean, the fact that it cost me over £100 could give you a bit of a clue that there could be a market for a really good quality podcast microphone at a more affordable price, for example. But you should never just make it about price because you will never make a profit in a world where you're dealing with Chinese factories that run at basically break even and get a small rebate from the Communist Party or the government or the local government once a year. In that kind of world of thin profit margins, you want to be making sure you solve a problem in a pretty unique way, in my opinion. And the people who do well in the 10K Collective and the Million Pound Mastermind very rarely simply solve a problem at a cheap price. I can't think of anyone in that group who doesn't have healthy profit margins. And that comes from differentiated products. So I think it's really, really important to talk to real people, understand the alternatives they have, i.e. your competitors, and then to ask them to use rival products and your own prototypes, or if you've got private label samples flown in from China, for example, and get them to give you honest feedback. I mean, before you go anywhere else. And by the way, how hard is this to do on a scale of 1 to 10? If you're selling, you know, podcast microphones, it's a little bit trickier. But if you're selling kitchen equipment, then go and talk to, if you're selling stuff for the household, which is mostly business to consumer, it mostly will be, then ask your partner to do it or somebody in your family or your friends who is a really avid cook and get them to use it and give you some feedback. How hard is that? It's not hard. It's just laziness that people sit there at the computer hour after hour trawling through spreadsheets, but also it's pretty miserable. So go talk to real people. It's not hard to do and you'll get immediate great feedback. And I've done this in masterminds when I used to run masterminds for beginners who didn't have any product live on Amazon, which I don't run currently. It's hard to get a commitment, but we did, somebody was thinking of selling baby stuff. And I said, right, do you have babies? He said, no. Okay, right. You need to talk to your target market. Fortunately, there was a lady there who had a 1.5-year-old son. And so I said, okay, talk to this person. And they had a conversation and there are 3 or 4 very clear, simple points immediately emerged that she would really want and that she really wouldn't want. And that was a very clarifying situation. So if you are not your own target customer, at least talk to people who are. If you are your own target customer, you can understand your product. You should still talk to other people. So understanding your customer, if you take nothing else from this podcast, or indeed any other podcast. Even if you just implement that, I truly believe that will put you ahead of the pack, because everyone's obsessed with looking at numbers and you need to look at the numbers and talk to people. Crazy idea. Walk and chew gum. Okay. The second type of person you want to understand is your product supplier, particularly if they're based in China or the Far East or any other country, which is very different. The cultural differences can be quite major. For example, a couple of simple things with Chinese suppliers. It's part of Far Eastern culture, certainly in Japan and China, for example, not only those, to never give a direct no. So if you ask a question like, can you do this in a 6-week timescale? They're not going to say no because it's culturally unacceptable. They might sort of say yes. So if you want to get a straight answer in that situation, you're going to have to give them a few different alternatives and sound them out a little bit more. And that's one of those cultural differences that you need to come to terms with and accept and work with. You can complain about it all you like, but that's just a reality culturally. Another thing is that there's a cultural difference in QC. I was talking to Ash Monger of IMEX Sourcing. And by the way, I'll be interviewing him for the new 10K Collective podcast. And if you're an advanced seller or you're already in business and you're wanting to expand rapidly and you're ambitious, then that's the perfect place to listen. So amazingfba.com/10k10k if you want to sign up to get exclusive access to that, get some raw cuts, the sort of early audio cuts of those interviews. So Ash was saying it's very simple. The one of the QC problems comes from the fact that there are an expectation of what is good enough in an app for an Amazon consumer, for an average Western consumer outside of Amazon, is very, very different from an expectation of what seems good enough for somebody who lives in China, because a lot of the product quality they would experience in a daily life would not necessarily be that high. The other thing is, of course, that a lot of people don't use products which may seem quite standard. So there's some Chinese factory where somebody was making shampoo where they used to do some weird stuff. And it turned out the reason was because none of the guys in the factory use shampoo. I guess they use soap or something. So it's just a couple of tiny examples. This can go very, very deep. I'm not an expert in those differences, but those are a couple of ones that spring to mind. So really understanding the culture of your supplier can really help you understand, you know, get much better quality relationships from the beginning. And it's not that hard. You just need to do a bit of research and talk to a few people who've already been doing it for a while. Two other sets of people that you're quite likely to, or they're not obligatory, even from the beginning, if you're starting an Amazon business from scratch or an e-commerce business, you're going to be dealing with two types of other people often. One is other suppliers of other things, for example, photographers and designers. What does a photographer need to do a good job, for example? Do you know how to write a brief for a photographer? Do you know how to give good examples, how to structure things, understand what they need from you? Same thing with a graphic designer. And the same with an industrial designer, if you're going the custom product route. What do they need from you? Now, obviously, a good quality person will normally articulate those things for you. If they're a well-articulated, confident Westerner, particularly a Brit or an American or a German or whatever, certain cultures where people will be more explicit. But if you are outsourcing your photography to a cheaper country, they may not have a culture where they're going to challenge you on the fact that you didn't give them a proper design brief. So you may have to find out more about what they need. But again, a bit of Googling and finding out, there's plenty of stuff on the podcast about that kind of thing. We haven't interviewed a graphic designer yet, which I must do, but we've interviewed a couple of photographers. Certainly we interviewed Rob Sleeth a while ago, and he talked about the importance of getting very clear brief for a photographer. By the way, just to clarify, if you want show notes for this show or any other show, just it's amazingfba.com/the number. So amazing F for Freddie, B for Bertie, A for alpha.com/328 for today's episode. And we will put show notes, links in the show notes, I should say, to other episodes such as what a photographer needs with Rob Sleeth. That's a very useful episode as well. The other person that you need to understand is really critical if you're going to have a business partner of any kind, whether you've got an investor, a debt investor, an actual formal business partner who co-owns it with you, somebody's like a sleeping partner who owns some of your business but isn't active in it, etc. All kinds in the broadest sense of partners or stakeholders, if you want to put it that way, people who invested in your success or failure. What are their aims in life? You need to really understand where they're going, where they're at in their life. Are they about to have kids, and have they just bought themselves a house? Are they about to get married? All the sort of significant life events. They're about to retire. Are they already retired and have plenty of time in their hands? And what's their sort of financial situation? What are their aims in business? And what about their aims with the business? Do they align with your aims? It's very important to think about that sort of thing, because we've talked about in a number of different masterminds over the years, including the sort of beginner ones, where sometimes we had some quite advanced people come in every so often. The aims that you have and your business partners have, or generally stakeholders, really critical they're aligned, like the timescale, the amount of money that you're going to allocate to this, the sort of other financial demands they might have. They might have a property empire that they need to allocate cash to. They might have a day job. They might own another business which demands cash. They might be saving up to buy themselves a residential property for themselves, to name but a few financial demands that may be there outside of the business world. And it's so important to understand the other person so that you can formulate a joint aim of the business. Are you creating a business to sell in 3 years' time, in 5 years' time? Do they need to take cash out of it now? Do they need to later? That sort of thing is really critical. Are you trying to create a global brand? Are you massively ambitious? You really got to understand your business partner. I can't say enough how important that is. And I think that's been one of my experiences that can change over time as well. And I've probably changed my tune in a couple of business partnerships. I've had more than a business partner. And again, it comes down to an honest conversation and making sure they understand where you're coming from, but also the other way around. So one of Covey's principles or the habits that we'll be talking about is to seek first to understand and then to be understood. So habit 5. So try and make sure you understand your business partner before you weigh in there and just kind of have a therapy session and just kind of dump all your stuff on your business partner. Try and understand where they're coming from first, but make sure you communicate as well. Hey there, this is Michael, and saying thank you for listening to the Amazing FBA episode you just listened to. Just want to mention that I mentioned at the top of the show our sister podcast, the 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, which is for 6, 7 and 8 figure sellers on Amazon. Specifically, that's who we're geared to. I'm sure that people doing bigger numbers will still have a lot of things to learn from it. And people doing smaller numbers, sure, but it's not going to be immediately actionable for you. So if that is you, keep listening to the Amazing FBA podcast. But if you're 6, 7 or 8 figures on Amazon or e-commerce, I really think you should check it out. So I just want to give you a flavor of what's coming up, or rather just a bit of a list. Not deeply exciting as podcasts go, but I just wanted to, if you're just checking it out, know whether it's for you and what sort of topics we cover. Here's what's coming up. So first of all, an interview with our own Ashley Pierce from the 10K Collective Mastermind, who is talking about his last year in e-commerce, where he went from $750,000 in 2018 in turnover to a run rate this year of $1.25 million. So that's from scratch in 3 years. Super smart man, and he had a lot of the right skills going in. And let's be clear about that. But he didn't have tons of capital, just the conventional amount. So I still think that's an incredible result. And also, he's a really nice guy and a very, very clear-minded and feet-on-the-ground business thinker. So there's so much value. If nothing else, check that out. Really cannot urge you enough. I mean, these guys that have been in the Mastermind for nearly 2 years now have just honed their game to the nth degree. I've never heard quality discussion like I hear in there. And I don't say that because it's about me. It's not about me. I'm just privileged to work with some super smart and great people. So do check it out. Other things coming up then, lots and lots of industry expert interviews. Here's a flavour. And honestly, this is about half the list of people who've agreed to come on for an interview. So several of these are already recorded. So with Ryan Shaffett from XCube Manufacturing, we are going to be talking about custom manufacturing in China. He's been out there about 18 years. And custom manufacturing, I can't emphasise enough how much that is the future. If you're still just purely private labelling stuff, it's going to get harder and harder to make a profit with that business model. I mean, I think it's got a year or two left in it, but sooner or later you need to get onto custom manufacturing. So this is a hyper critical skill set that you should be learning, I believe, to future proof your business. Second is funding, which is another massive topic, how to fund growth, because any scaling business, as Vern Harnish says, growth sucks cash. This is the law of gravity of scaling. Therefore, we've got to look into raising capital, and one way is debt. And Bruce Mack is going to talk to us about that. Aaron O'Sullivan is coming on from systems culture impact to talk about outsourcing and company culture. And again, if you're scaling up a business, you're going to have a very painful time if you keep trying to do it yourself, even if you've hit, say, $1 million a year equivalent, which I know some people have without a VA. Guess what? You're not going to get to 2 million without a VA or basically a proper team on board. So that's something that is definitely a big barrier to entry. And also, to put it the other, on its head, something that will add to your comfort and enjoyment of your business if you go with it. So that's a few things that we got in depth, just in a bit more superficial detail. Chris Shipfling of Providium with Jason Somerville is going to be talking about selling your FBA business, and they have a private equity take on that from the Wall Street side. So really fascinating angle on that. FBA reimbursements with Ben Chambers. Amazon often owes about $50,000 to $100,000 for any serious seller at some points in the year. How do you get your hands on that? It's just a fantastic source of cash, apart from anything else. So Amazon's got your cash. If you can get it out of the system, guess what? That's fantastically healthy for your business. Ash Munger's talking about quality control from China. He's got an incredibly detailed system for doing that. He's been out in China running IMEX sourcing for 9 years now, so he seriously knows his business backwards and sideways and in detail. Connor Gillivan's going to talk about the quick outsourcing system that FreeUp represents and how to outsource quickly and easily. Pauline Masson came on this morning. We talked about pricing, which is a very underrated and very important thing for driving profits. Will Churnland's coming back on, and we're going to talk about evaluating the competition from a real sort of standpoint of somebody who's not just looking at the numbers, although Will is super smart with numbers, but from the point of view of the overall competitive landscape. Really, as ever, Will's a brilliant Amazon thinker, always worth hearing. Kevin King's coming back on. Not even sure what we're going to be talking about yet with Kevin, but you know what? He's always a super smart guy when it comes to the marketing side, so I'm sure we have lots to learn from him. What else we got coming up? Amazon account suspension with Joshua Price, launching to overseas markets with John Kant, PPC advertising and profit margins with Mike Zagare of PPC Entourage. What else? Chris Rawlings is coming back from Judo Launch. Presumably we'll be talking about launch. Alex Oxford is coming on to talk about sales tax. He is super smart at explaining this stuff in very simple terms, but yet dealing with all the details as well. Alex is absolutely a critical person to listen to if you sell in the USA. Kostas Anastasiadis is coming back to talk about short-term funding. Brad Moss is coming back, who used to run Seller Central, so he's a super sharp guy as well. China sourcing with Manuel Bekvar. Law for Amazon sellers with Paul Ruffelson. Augustus Kligas is coming back on to talk about various different topics. John Cavendish to talk about translations. Paul Harvey to talk about chatbots. Brian Johnson to talk about PPC. Greg Mercer to talk about product research. Nadine Eich to talk about Germany and customer service in Germany. And probably going to get my old accountant Penny Lowe back to talk about bookkeeping basics. Whew. We have, as you can tell, an incredible amount of really practical, useful content coming up, a lot of which is already recorded and is definitely coming out over the next few weeks. So get yourself over there, folks. It's just a place you need to be. This is not just a bunch of let's fill the airways with the latest kind of hack that's going to die in 2 months. I'm taking care to really focus on content that is as evergreen as possible. Why? Because then you listen once and implement over multiple years, or at least months, and then you get the payoff over time, so you get better return on your listening time, if you like. And I think that's a really important metric. Return on listening for me is something I aim to give you in spades. So get yourself over there. 10K Collective is the thing you need to look for. 10K Collective e-commerce podcast, to give it the full title. You can look on iTunes, aka Apple Podcasts apps, or Stitcher. We should be on Spotify any minute now, and we're just waiting to get ourselves on Google Play and Google Podcasts. So it will be more and more available. If you can't find it on your listening device, your preferred device, then just go to the website and you can listen directly there. 10kcollective.com. That's 10k, 10k for kilo. Collective is collective.com. That's 10kcollective.com. Thanks so much for listening to such a very, very lengthy post-roll pitch, if you like. I'm not actually selling anything, so it's not a pitch in any strict sense. It's free and it always will be. Of course, we will mention paid services from time to time, but I believe in giving like 95%, 99% value and a little pitch at the end. So it's not going to be a pitch fest. We are just aiming to build massive goodwill and getting ourselves out there and known. And of course, we hope to attract
some wonderful people to our masterminds. And if people can use the services that some of our experts provide, so much the better. But really, that's our main thrust, is to get ourselves out there and build goodwill. So you know more than you're ever going to need to know in life about this podcast. Get yourself over there and listen. Stop listening to Amazing FBA. What are you still doing here? I'm going to go and have a cup of tea. I suggest you go and do the same. And I'll speak to you in the next show.